Okay, good evening, everybody, and welcome to this appeals and review meeting of the 28th of October. First of all, we need to make you all aware that this meeting will be recorded. Hello, Mark. This meeting will be recorded and sound recording made available via the Council's website. Please also note that under the openness of local government regulation 2014, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recording is not under the Council's control. My name's John Capleton, I've been chairing the meeting of Borough Council for Mount Sorrel. And if you could go around and do the...
Councillor Halford-Burstall.
Councillor Charles from Rosalie Turkiston.
Councillor Needham from Scotland.
I'm Laura Strong here to take the notes. This is my colleague Sally Watson.
Lovely.
I'm Mark Fennell. I'm the team leader for Natural and Built Environment.
Rupert Sims, Senior Ecological Officer.
Dr. Richard Curtis, Aspects of Borough Culture.
Thank you.
And Catherine Harrison, Catherine. Principal Solicitor for the Council.
Right, thank you very much. yes, the procedure is with. I'm going to ask Catherine, who is a representative of the Strategic Support, to introduce the report, and then ask and the planning officers to present the case for the order. We will then ask some questions. We'll invite you to present your case and question you as well. Then anything else that comes up and needs discussing, we will do so. We will then retire and. Four of us will retire with Catherine and make a decision. First of all, do we have a quorum?
We do, yes. We do have an apology from Councillor Keith Harris, but you've got enough.
Okay. But anyway, we still have a quorum. That can be about four people.
Yeah, the quorum is three, yeah.
Okay. The minutes of the previous meeting held on the 30th of September, and that was about the land on Ashby Road at the corner of Snellsford Lane. I read the minutes, I think they're all right. Anybody want to second them?
Councillor Howard, second.
Thank you. And okay, so that's it. We'll accept those. Questions under any committee procedures?
No,
we have not. So the current case is the tree preservation order at the land at Wood Close on Wyvernhoe Drive, Corn. Could I call upon them? Representative of the Head of Strategic Support to introduce the report, please.
Yes, thank you. We're here to consider the Borough of Charnwood, Wood Close, Wyvernhoe Drive, Corn, Tree Preservation Order 2019. A provisional order has been made by the Head of Planning Regeneration that it's been objected to, and therefore it's before the committee to confirm or consider whether to confirm the order. The options open up to you are to confirm the order, to confirm it with modifications, or to to confirm the order, in which case it will fall away. The test that we are considering is whether, in the interest of amenity, the trees that are subject to the order want protection.
Thank you.
Okay,
good. And I ask the Head of Planning and Regeneration to present the case for confirming the order, please.
Thank you. So This order has been around in some form for quite some time now. The start of proceedings, if you like, was early in December 2018, when I was called out to go and inspect the site in response to neighbour complaints about tree felling. I went out to have a look and found that the site was very difficult to assess at that time, and that largely explains why the original order was an area TPO. It was an emergency order that covered all the trees on the site. The owner objected to that application, and we were setting the process up for hearing that order, but discovered that the level of modification that we wanted to make was too much, really. It would have been out with the regulations. We couldn't have done it within the regulations, and so that order was withdrawn, and the order you have before you is a new order. And really, what it attempts to do, in my mind, is reach a compromise between that blanket area order and the very limited order that was put forward by, or on behalf of the applicant, by the applicant's arborist, in response to that. And so I see it as a compromise and a halfway house. And what it consists of, you can see in your plan, you've got it in your pack, but I can just dig it out. Okay, so you can see it's divided into two groups. One group,
page nine,
yes, thank you. Group one, which includes trees along the sort of western boundary, if you like, and a group of trees along the centre of that strip. Trees along the eastern boundary and stretching across the centre of the site. And then this, which is different, this is a woodland order. And I'll come on to explain that in due course. So there are two groups and one woodland that form the basis of this order. So you've got a description of the site there. One thing that has been flagged up in the objection is that it would be inappropriate to include a woodland order as part of this order. And I think one of the reasons for that is because it does say in the planning practice guidance that it would not normally be the case that you would grant a woodland order in a private garden. That says to me quite clearly, not that you should not do that, but there need to be exceptional circumstances before you do so. And I've set out in my description of the site the reasons why I believe this to be an exceptional case. The site has been shown as woodland of one sort or another on mapping going back well over 100 years. Initially as orchard, it's shown on current ordnance survey maps as broadleaf woodland. It's listed on two woodland inventories, and I should say that they're assessed, they're not the result of ground investigations, generally speaking. It's done from aerial images, and it confirms that there's continuous canopy cover across the area. So two separate inventories there, and it's also listed as a site of natural environment significance in the Corn Neighbourhood Plan. Now that's a recently adopted plan, but this listing does predate this incident and this order. I thought it was important to get that clear. So very helpfully at the outset, the owner's arborist produced a detailed report which tagged all the trees on site that were remaining. So a large number of trees had been removed. As far as I could tell from inspecting the site, I made a visit with the senior ranger, the council's senior open spaces officer. Most of the trees that had been felled were in good health, but there are a large number of trees remaining in various states. There's some very large grand specimens, and I think it's fair to say that those are the specimens that the objector has suggested are protected, and there are a number of other lesser specimens. What I'd say about the arboriculture report is, whilst it's very helpful in labelling and identifying the trees, it seems somewhat limited to me in being merely an arboricultural assessment and hasn't taken fully into account the amenity value of those trees. The amenity value of those trees across the whole site, I think, is evidenced by the amount of local objection we've had on this. It's exceptional. I think there are some major planning applications which attract less attention and less response from the public. So we've had a number of emails. I've had regular sort of updates from residents, and a petition has been submitted, and that petition I think summarises the content of the emails, and it's provided in your report. Aside from that sort of prima facie evidence of local public amenity value, it's clear to me that whilst many of the trees are not in and of themselves spectacular specimens, all the trees that have been protected sit in groups which together contribute to the screening and the sort of sylvan environment of that site. Were, for example, if we take that central block, group two, across the middle, page 9 again, I think, aren't we? So look at this group, for example. I mean, a lot of the trees in here are conifers that you know, sort of large Leylandii type things, really. And so in many people's eyes, they're not particularly fine specimens. They're not exceptional trees, but together they form a group, and they screen this building from what's the name of the street down
Button Lane.
Thank you, Button Lane. Yeah. Were they not here, you'd be able to see not only the house, but you'd be able to see straight through the site and traffic going in both directions. That brings me on to another aspect of this order, and that is that the owner has made the point that this group here, whilst it does have amenity value in my mind, creates a rather dark garden and shades. So this order, to my mind, creates some flexibility, and it's intended in a way to respond to that concern and that feeling about the site. And my view is that once this woodland becomes re-established, and I'll talk about the woodland a bit more in a moment, it may be possible to review this group because it would no longer have that screening function. So I see this order as being one that A, represents a compromise between the two positions I set out earlier, and B, hopefully introduces some flexibility that responds to the concerns, as they've been expressed to me, of the owner. So this woodland area, there's another controversial aspect to this, and you'll have many photographs in your pack. I should say that there's an active enforcement case at the moment, and the owner has been invited to attend an interview by the enforcement team. The reason that has not happened yet is because the enforcement team, fairly sensibly, are waiting for the outcome of this hearing before they decide how to proceed. My assessment of this area as woodland stems from the fact that apart from the fact it's been mapped as such for many years, it's had continuous tree cover for many years, and immediately following the felling, it was apparent that the site was regenerating as woodland, and there were many species and many seedlings of many species generating across the site, and I've included photographs there for you, including sycamore, which you'd expect to turn up pretty much anywhere, but also silver birch, beech, oak, and ash and holly and yew in large numbers across the site. And you will see in a moment the condition of the site at the moment. It looks like a clear site. And that condition has only been possible by repeated breaches of the order, in the form of removal of stumps, in the form of heavy mulching, of chippings and arisings to sort of six inches or so to suppress regrowth, and by repeated cutting of saplings and seedlings. And there's one or two photographs in there which show new saplings that have been cut and regrown. You'll also see as well from some of those photographs that some of the stumps of the original trees are regrowing. And that to me says that this area is woodland. It's capable of regenerating as woodland. And it should be treated as such, and it's the only way really to protect that part of the site. It's the bottom end of the garden. If that site were to regenerate as woodland, it would give a lot of flexibility really to the owner in terms of what they did with the rest of the site, but that's something for the future really. And as I say, you know, group two may become redundant at some point in the future. What I'd like to draw your attention to as well, I've spoken about amenity value and the way this site contributes to the feel of the area and the look of the area. It's identified in the local plan. There's another aspect to this, and that is the it's a secondary aspect of tree preservation orders, which is their biodiversity value. And I'd say in this case, the section 40 of the Natural Environment and Rural Communities Act is engaged, which places a duty upon all local authorities to have regard to biodiversity in the exercise of all their functions, insofar as that is compatible with the exercise of that function. I'd say it is in this case. It's explicit in the tree preservation order regulations that biodiversity should be considered, and it's also my view, having visited the site on a number of occasions, that the amenity value and the biodiversity value are intrinsically linked, and it's really noticeable when you go to Budden Lane or Wood Close or Wivenhoe Drive, the amount of bird song in the area. You know, there's not many places in urban areas where you get sort of 360 degree surround sound bird song. That depends on the area being wooded. It's a lovely aspect of the area, and so to my mind, the amenity value and biodiversity value are linked by that fact. I'm going to pause there and ask if anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Rupert. Anything anybody want to raise at this point? I'm interested in the woodland cover, because I take note of the thing on page 11, I think it's really part of the objector's letter, and they say it's unlikely to be appropriate to use the woodland classification in gardens, because woodlands, etc., etc. And then it goes on to say that large parts of the W1 area are covered with lawn, and woodlands don't contain lawn, whereas gardens do. Then we also go back to the Ordnance Survey map of 1903, when it's classified as an orchard.
Yeah.
Is this not an orchard stroke garden which has been allowed to really grow out of control?
So in 1903, yeah, it was an orchard. That's broadly a woodland type. It's since been planted and had a certain amount of natural regeneration, so it's had continuous cover, so it's proper to regard it as woodland. The idea that you can't have lawns or grassland in woodland, I think, is mistaken. There are a number of woodlands, not just in Leicestershire, but across the country, called, for example, lawned wood, and the etymology of that does relate to grassland and clearing in woodland. You'll have wood pasture in perhaps not so much in this country, but certainly on the continent, and you can visit national parks with ancient woodland where you will find, as a result of grazing, which is a type of woodland management, mature trees and continuous canopy cover, but grassland underneath. The lawn, as you see it at the moment, if you look back at some of those earlier pictures, has become established as a result of repeated cutting, which, as I said, is in contravention to the order. It's removed saplings from the tree, and you drew attention to the part of the regulations where it said it wouldn't normally be appropriate to have a tree preservation in order in gardens. I've pointed out why I think this is a woodland and why it's being mapped as a woodland, but I'd also like to draw your attention to tree preservation, woodland tree preservation, on the opposite side of Budden Drive within private gardens. So there's a very local precedent for this.
It's carry on there.
Yeah, Councillor Howe. In the objection letter, it mentioned laurel and rhododendron.
Yeah.
But can they be cleared anyway, irrespective of the woodland area, because they're not trees?
Yes, they can, and I wouldn't expect the preservation order to cover those. And as we discussed last time, actually, a woodland preservation order gives a certain amount of freedom to the owner, because it facilitates proper woodland management. And you know, you'll know from having driven around the borough, there are lots of ancient woodlands with laurel and rhododendron in them, and you know, we want to see that stuff cleared, really, on the whole. It does provide a certain amount of ground cover, but retaining it wouldn't fit with proper woodland management. So it would be entirely appropriate to remove laurel and rhododendron, or, you know, in a private garden, to let it grow to an extent. Yeah. And the objective, really, of the woodland order would be to retain continuous canopy cover with as much flexibility as that allows the owner.
I've got some questions, but not at the moment. Thank you. Okay.
And again on the woodland one, if you go down Budden Lane, this is the only property where it actually backs there, where you have an open space backing onto Budden Lane. All the rest are developed, all the rest are houses, yeah, aren't they? bearing in mind that all those are built on, why is this so different?
Well, they have houses on them, yeah. Quite simply. I don't think you could create a woodland order on a building.
Oh, no.
They're different. Planning permission's been granted for them in the past. I don't think we're in a position to trawl through all that planning background. But I think the point about this site is that you know, it does contribute to that feel of Budden Lane. It does have open space.
Yes.
And that's really what does make it special. It does make it different.
The other thing, somewhere in here, probably around about page 12 or so, it says, regardless of any trees that may have been present prior to the serving of the previous TPO order, it's in December 2018, a TPO cannot protect the amenity of trees that have been removed before the order is made.
The tree...
Does that affect the... If they've been removed before then, can we protect them as far as regeneration is concerned, or...?
I think we can, because the tree preservation order regulations stipulate that an authority can use an order to protect current or future value. And actually, at the time of the order, it was apparent to me that as well as removing, since the order was made rather, as well as removing a number of laurel trees and stumps, a number of younger yew trees were grubbed out. You'll see a photograph here, which from about June, it's in your pack, which shows there are a number of trees left in the ground. That's hazel. It's not immediately apparent that it's a hazel, that's a hazel. There's an ash regrowing down here, and there's sycamore here. So as well as all those seedlings that have emerged and germinated since the order was made, there are a number of trees left on site after the order was made, some of which have since been cleared, some of which remain in place, which to me tell that story that this is a woodland area and it's behaving like a woodland in the way it's regenerating.
Now, as far as the amenity value is concerned, yes, I went down Budden Lane and had a look, and I went down the other road. But yes, I can see that this is visible from the road, but very, very little use that road, isn't it? It's a
no, I think it's very well used because
Budden Lane.
Yes, there's a footpath that connects out the back and goes out across the countryside.
Yes,
so I've become aware of a number of people who don't live down Budden Lane but use it to walk dogs. I think horse riders take there. You know, it's well used because it's a path out into open countryside from Quorn. At the other end of the site, there's children going past to and from school. That's Wivenhoe Drive.
Yes.
So it's not just the immediate residents who have an interest, and you know, I think it's something like 39 signatures on that petition. It's quite a few for a small village, really. There are people from outside who don't live in Quorn who use that road to walk dogs. So people travel there to go on country walks.
Do we know why the site was cleared?
No, I did speak to the owner immediately afterwards, principally to inform him that we'd made an order, because I became aware he wasn't living on site, and he did say that he had undertaken various surveys and things prior to doing this and had planned it for quite some time, and then promised to let me have those reports, because it would have made this whole process a lot easier, really, I think. But I haven't seen those, so I can't really say.
Okay, thanks very much. Anybody else want to take over?
I've just got one question. Oh, Councillor Needham for the recording. I've just got one question about the petitions. How common is it for residents to bring a petition like that?
I've not seen one before.
Right.
I don't know, Mark, you've been here a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and you, in your opinion, 39 is quite a high number for that?
I look at a lot of major planning applications that attract a lot of interest and a lot of objection, and this is more than you'd see for quite a few of those.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that's thanks very much, Rupert. Could I ask the representative of the objector, would you like to present a case?
Thank you. Again, for the benefit of the recording, this is Richard Curtis. I'd like to start, if I may, by just coming back to the discussion on woodland.
Yeah.
And if I can, I would just like to start with a brief bit of clarification. The applicant's arboriculturist was referred to on a number of occasions, John Coe, not myself, I would like to make clear. I've agreed to help the objector since the order was made, and the only inputs you would have seen from us to date are these images that are in your pack. I would also like to agree that the compromise that was made from the area order to the order as you see it now is procedural and agreed, and I believe that the appropriate use of groups has been used in that order. I do, however, feel that the use of the woodland classification is the stumbling block at the issue at hand. So that would lead me to a couple of questions that are specific to that. You very kindly mentioned that a large number of trees had been removed. Do you know how many, roughly? The densities of stocking?
No, I don't. It's based on aerial images, and well, you can. Very difficult to count a site that was in this state.
You've that image taken from outside, haven't you? It shows.
I've got this image taken from inside. I mean, that bottom end of the garden was, you know, sort of 3 metres deep in stems and branches.
Yeah.
It was quite dangerous, actually, to get around there. You know, quite a difficult job to have cleared that site.
The trees had been dropped at that time and stacked up ready for processing.
No, they hadn't. They'd been dropped very, you know, very quickly over a weekend, really, and left in situ. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't made an assessment of stocking density. My assessment of woodland cover is based on recent aerial images, which mm-hmm. show continuous canopy cover, and various mapping.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
understood. Okay, you mentioned. I'm just moving around here. You mentioned that the health of the trees appeared to be good. How was that assessed?
As much as we could by looking at the stems that were fallen on the ground. Quite a few of them had split open, and so you could see the heartwood. There was no heart rot, there were no obvious fruiting bodies, and whereas with a tree standing up, it's not always easy to see fruiting bodies, when it's lying down, notwithstanding the difficulty getting around the site, there was...
I've just framed a mental picture here, so I can see that there was nothing physically wrong with the tree. Structure appeared to be good, but physiological condition, you see the trees appeared to be good.
Well, it was the middle of winter, but amongst all those branches that came down, you know, if they had been in poor physiological condition, you'd expect to see dead wood and dead branches and so on. And
short extension graphics.
Exactly,
So, when you first returned to the site on the 3rd, of December, after the trees had been felled.
That was the first date of the first visit.
I
think so, hang on.
I think it was. The TPO served on that day.
Yeah.
Was there an assessment undertaken then, or subsequently, of the amenity value of the area you've called W1? I know that you did it for the other trees on the site using Tempo, and you came to the conclusion that the trees were worthy of a TPO as a collective. Did you take an assessment of the amenity value of W1?
It was impossible to assess them at the time fully, mm-hmm. but it was apparent that the area was dominated by large, healthy, mature trees.
Okay.
And when you look at the trees around the site that remain standing and have been accepted as worthy of individual tree preservation orders, mm-hmm. my understanding of those trees is that they would have met those criteria based on John Coe's, is it Joe or John Coe's? Mr. Coe's assessment. And so my view was that yes, they would have had significant amenity value. I've had the opportunity to look at street view images mm-hmm. As well.
Okay.
Impossible to make a full assessment once the trees have, Yeah,
appreciate it. Yeah. Okay. You mentioned that a number of species were regenerating from the stump. So the trees that were there at the time the order was made, or allegedly made, what species did you notice to be regenerating, could I ask?
Currently regenerating, so this is based on a recent visit, ash and yew, but also sycamore. I don't think any of the beech is regenerating, but there were a large number of beech seedlings around the bottom of those beech trees where the beech trees had been.
Okay. And you mentioned that this area has capacity to behave like woodland. Would you agree with me that if you that any arrested land, be it farmland, be it brownfield, be it tundra, if it's left long enough, it will become managed, unmanaged, it will become woodland through succession?
Yeah, that's a fair point, and it's a reasonable observation, but I think with any other land you wouldn't see such a rapid and diverse regeneration. I've listed a number of native species that were regenerating in their hundreds really across the site. You wouldn't expect that on arable land, tundra, or anywhere else. So the nature of the regeneration is particular to this site and is particular to woodland.
And lastly, do you feel that a number of the species that you've seen regenerating on the site could possibly have come in from the sylvan setting, i.e. the seed bank surrounding the site, particularly sycamore, for example?
Well, and that's why I pulled out sycamore as an example of a tree you'd expect to see anywhere, but there are large sycamores around the site. Yew, I would say not. There's oak. There's not an awful lot of oak elsewhere. And I'd say there's the surrounding seed bank would have made a contribution, but the yew and the oak especially, and to a certain extent the ash, I think, because of where it is, there's ash regeneration around the base of an old ash tree, and I think it's reasonable to conclude that whatever the contribution from surrounding land, a lot of that seed bank, and I think it's been facilitated by the soil type as well, you know, some of those trees will regenerate much more easily in woodland soil than they will in say arable soil, had this been a car park or whatever beforehand.
I take your point. I think there's, would you agree then that there is quite possibly a big influence to do with opening up that soil surface from the removal of the crown, the crown area, that perhaps instigated the regen rather than the fact that it's a woodland soil?
Disturbing the soil is bound to have an influence wherever you do it. I would have thought it does, but if the seed bank's not there, the regeneration won't happen.
Okay. And you mentioned lastly, and I do mean it lastly, orchard as being a woodland type. Do you stand by that?
I think in the broadest sense, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the only questions for me.
Thank you very much indeed. Anybody?
Again, if I may, Councillor Charles. Why is the site being cleared?
The site's been cleared to reinstate a lawn. Without going too much into the history at this time, the property, after being an orchard, was cleared for a number of new dwellings to occur on Budden Lane. After the clearance, that part of the site, with the original building of Woodclose in 1912, was used for lawn and had been maintained as lawn by the late owner from the 60s onwards. And perhaps his mistake was to plant rhododendron, but I'll come on to that shortly. So it's a lawn with ornamental trees.
Okay, and just leading on from that then, are there any plans to plant any further trees in the development of the lawn garden?
All proposals related to the reinstatement of the lawn are on hold until we've established where this goes.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Okay. Nothing else? Mark?
We've moved on to we're moving on to the presentation from the appellant.
Yes. If you want any comments on the presentation,
no, not from the presentation from the officials, but
I see.
Yes.
Okay. One thing I would like to who's going to answer is on page 37 they talk about the objector's alternative proposal. Could somebody
As I understand it, it's shown in an appendix in my report. Um, in, It's not immediately clear there, actually, but I think as well, you might, yeah, there, you've got it there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what, that's on page 37, thank you. Is that as it stands? Yeah. So page 37, the trees you see circled,
yeah,
are the ones that have been proposed to be
protected.
Yeah, and it's my view that that doesn't reflect the amenity value of the trees as a whole in their groups and so on, and it doesn't provide adequate protection for the character of the site as a whole.
So that would allow, if those were protected, that would allow the lawns to be established.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But it would remove that screen at the back of the house, which is G2, isn't it?
Yes, it would.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Nothing more anybody wants to know?
No, thanks, Jim.
Okay. No. Any more comments? No. Rupert. Okay, then we're going to retire and have a discussion. The four of us will go plus.
So if I could just briefly explain our position. I'm firmly of the view, with my forestry background, that there was never a woodland within this area identified as W1, as after at least 1912, when the house was built, because of the pure and simple fact that this was a lawn. It was a lawn with ornamental trees, and it was bound by ornamental plantings. If it was a woodland, then it can only have been a secondary woodland, which you'll be familiar with,
yeah,
meaning that it was either planted after 1912, or it arose from natural succession after that time. But we know that W1 was lawn with ornamental trees, shrubs and boundary plantings, and before that it was an orchard. So it's highly unlikely it arose from natural succession in the strict terms of stumps. But accordingly, we know it was not managed or planted as a woodland, certainly by the original owner, and certainly not after the 1960s when the late owner bought the property. So we're at a little bit of a loss as to know what it is that's being sought to be recreated through the use of a TPO. Quite a bit of mention of the use of government websites to classify wood close as garden, if you like, as a woodland. And I'll just make a point of drawing your attention to the fact that most of these sources come from satellite and LIDAR imagery. They are not ground truth, as Mr. Sims acknowledges. And it's highly unlikely that this particular classification was revisited on account that the DEFRA website actually cites the confidence level in that assessment as woodland as being low. I'm willing to give you a number of examples whereby we have challenged that assessment on other sites and to prove that the habitat assessment is wrong. So in a nutshell, that woodland designation would have arisen from an algorithm based on vegetative coverage. It doesn't distinguish between trees and shrubs. And again, this comes back to the mistake that our late occupier made of planting rhododendron and laurel, in the sense that, as you well know, it's very invasive. Mm. Unfortunately, in the last 15 years of the late occupier's life, he wasn't able to manage the garden in the way that he had from the 60s. And I understand that gardening was very much his passion. Consequently, as it comes to no surprise to you, Mr. Sims, the rhododendron proliferated. And if you look at the relatively few number of ornamental trees occurring within that garden, part of the garden, you'll notice that you can't distinguish those from the sort of 80% garden coverage provided by the rhododendron on aerial views, and neither could DEFRA without ground sourcing it. And I think that's important because it's very clear to me that nobody actually assessed what was on the ground there when deciding that there was a woodland present, let alone one to protect. I've noticed that woodland is also mentioned in the context of policy ENV4, trees, woodland and hedges, in the context of the neighbourhood plan. I think that's important, and I'm very pleased to see that trees are being considered in the way they should be. But we're of the view that since planning policy can only capture operations that, that constitute development requiring planning permission, we feel that EMV4 really doesn't carry weight in this case, which is whether or not there is a woodland and whether or not it is expedient to protect it. I think the use of the woodland TPO is overhead to create new habitat. We know this wasn't a woodland, it was a lawn with ornamental trees. Prior to that, it was an orchard. Any trees still standing in the immediate vicinity, which we accept there are a number, I think there's 9 on the frontage, including a large acacia, predominantly comprised of Lawson cypress, and there are some cypress and sycamore on this boundary, plus all the beech, which you've highlighted as being important on the western boundary. They are important trees. Some of them are worthy of a TPO, but they're certainly not worthy of the TPO classification. They would satisfy a TPO as individuals or as groups. So we don't feel that it's been an appropriate use of the woodland classification in that sense. And I think it's very important, if we look at this in terms of the hurdles, the first hurdle is the TPO can't really be made to relate to trees that are simply not there at that time that the order was made. Now, I appreciate the sentiment to protect trees that may arise, such as through natural regeneration, etc. But the fact is, these trees, as a woodland, in that sense, weren't present at the time the order was made. That horse had bolted, I'm afraid. Now, the purpose of that TPO is to protect trees, and in this case, W1, in the interest of amenity. But I'm perplexed by the fact that council did not and could not assess the amenity of the trees that have been felled within W1. Using current guidelines for assessing amenity and the council's own methodology, which is TEMPO, any judgment regarding the importance of W1's interior to amenity is wholly indefensible because it wasn't viewed when it was intact. I think that suggesting that we came to a bit of agreement just now where it was suggested that the woodland classification could be used in gardens. And you're correct, Mr. Sims is correct, that the woodland classification is unlikely to be appropriate for use in gardens, but there are circumstances where they will be. And I agree that it would have to be extraordinary circumstances that, you know, that where the woodland is a woodland proper and has to be recognised for its extraordinarily high quality, its cultural importance, possibly significance in terms of history, and no doubt for its ecological value. And the sort of the antithesis to those kind of woodlands, and I'm thinking about the woodlands you find in the grounds of somewhere like Blenheim Palace, is, if I can't forgive me, Wood Close. Besides, there was never a woodland. I've mentioned the part about obsolete mapping sources, so I won't go over that again. But I did notice that there's quite a bit of play made on seedlings, and I want to make the point that seedlings, yes, they're an indication of succession and woodland establishing itself by natural means. However, the TPO for a W1, in any event, relates to trees, i.e. what one might normally recognise to be a tree, and saplings, which are biologically distinct from seedlings. And I would like to highlight that the woodland classification does not relate to regenerative stumps, for the obvious negative reasons that associated with regrowth from stumps, which in terms of an visual amenity assessment would be very low. I note that there is obvious visibility to consider in the context of visual amenity, and I recognise that it is a sylvan and very verdant setting, and that would be important to retain. But there's been no assessment of the contribution that the area of ornamental trees and out of control rhododendron made to W1. And in any event, visibility alone and birdsong or any some perceived ecological value, I'm afraid, comes under that catch-all of wouldn't qualify, doesn't merit a TPO on its own, which is para 8, I think, of the guidelines. Dare I say, I'm fairly certain that in such a sylvan verdant setting, there no doubt will be birds still singing in that area. So to conclude, I feel that the W1, in my professional view,
the W1 classification doesn't relate to the trees that are standing, and in any event did not relate to a lawn with ornamental trees and shrubs. And I feel that its classification without a visual amenity assessment and without a proper assessment of what was in allegedly W1 is inappropriate and not defensible. We don't know if there is a significant negative impact on amenity, because there was never any evidence or assessment on which to base that or to test that. And then in terms of public benefit delivery, I don't see how we can argue that public benefit would be provided by forcing this chap to convert his lawn, his garden, into a new woodland and then be willing to maintain it. This was never assessed. We don't know what the public benefit was. And it was predominantly rhododendron in any event. And I'm sure you all know, I mean, Mr. Sims has alluded to it, the Forestry Commission's first piece of advice during any native habitat restoration is to clear the rhododendron. You know, it has a negative ecological value. A lot of public money has been spent in Hampshire right now clearing rhododendron from the New Forest. It certainly wouldn't qualify, I'm afraid, for a woodland classification.
Thanks to the Victorians.
Yeah, quite, the plantlands is bless them.
So would you accept then that rhododendron does occur in woodland?
Rhododendron occurs wherever arrested management will allow it to occur, but in any event, rhododendron wouldn't qualify as a woodland, as a species you could TPO a woodland.
So you would decide something is or isn't woodland on the basis of rhododendron being present or otherwise?
I certainly wouldn't use rhododendron as an indicator. No.
No. And would you accept that secondary woodland is woodland?
Secondary woodland is a type of woodland. It's a classification of woodland.
It
would have to either have occurred naturally or been planted, obviously, since that was clear trees.
And planted woodland is also woodland.
Of course.
And both those woodland types would be capable of being, under certain circumstances, being designated and covered by a woodland tree preservation order.
If the species assemblage, stocking density and structure of woodland was present, I think that's fairly reasonable.
But species assemblage, stocking density aren't specific requirements for the assessment for a tree preservation order.
I think if you're going to...
Public amenity is what you meant, I think, is it?
Public amenity is obviously one of the tests, but in order to confer a woodland order, there has to be woodland in the first instance. Mm. Now, an orchard, which is not a woodland, under any assessment, it's a silvicultural regime, a horticultural regime, is a planted area of continuous cover, but it is distinct from woodland.
Wasn't the orchard removed?
The orchards were cleared prior to 1912 when the houses were
My reason for saying that broadly speaking orchard is woodland is based on perhaps not the arboricultural interpretation but the ecological one, and the fact that traditional orchard is a priority woodland habitat is widely read, but this isn't orchard anymore. Yeah. And I mentioned the orchard to demonstrate continuous canopy cover over a period of many years, and it seems that there was clearance of that and the area was cleared of trees at some point early in the 20th century, but since then it has developed over a number of years continuous canopy cover. And by the same token, having only visited recently, you won't have been able to assess the extent to which that canopy cover was accounted for by rhododendron. There's a large percentage of yew in there, and when I look at canopy cover on aerial images, it's quite clear that large mature trees with adjoining canopies create that canopy cover. And you're absolutely right to point out that the LiDAR images can be misinterpreted, and I did mention that those woodland inventories are based on satellite images, but we've got a number of additional pieces of information that contribute to that. recent Google satellite images make it quite obvious that there's continuous, not understory, not a shrub layer, but continuous canopy cover with mature trees. We've got the designation in the core neighbourhood plan which recognises that character, and also Google Street View hasn't updated recently, and you can assess from Street View the extent to which that woodland area screens the rest of the site and is formed of mature trees. There's laurel and rhododendron in there, or there certainly was. Along with the laurel and rhododendron that was removed, a number of ash saplings, hazel, were also removed. I've shown you photographs of some of those.
I've yet to see anything that's convincing me that in a site that was impossible and unsafe to access, that there was a number of small diameter ash present. Can we return to continuous cover? There absolutely were.
So I've been looking at this site over a number of months. I did make it clear to the owner that stumps and there should be no woodland work undertaken. You've seen it at a time where there's been, trees felled, stacked and removed, vehicles trapped over it, and then a pause. And not all the trees were removed at that point. There were a number of yew trees in amongst those rendered rhododendrons that were then subsequently cleared. That clearance wasn't entirely effective, and there were a number of other. I mean, I've showed you this picture here, and which one was it? In June, you can see there were a number of hazel and ash trees dotted around, which were not. Which haven't germinated this year, they haven't come from this year's seed bank, they were there already. And whilst I take the point that this is a garden and the owner should be able to enjoy it and manage it as he sees fit, to a large extent that's what's been going on, but there's been continuous tree canopy that cover there and a certain amount of natural regeneration. You mentioned the laurel and rhododendron. That doesn't have any bearing on whether it's a woodland or not. It could introduce an element of confusion, but I think it's perfectly obvious that canopy cover isn't explained by the presence merely of laurel and rhododendron. There's a lot of holly in there as well, which certainly you wouldn't be able to pick out from aerial images.
There's a lot of points there. I'll keep bringing it back to continuous cover. You're absolutely right. There is no distinction there is no distinction between trees and shrubs as we've established. But what we do know is that 80% of that lawn, that part of the garden, was under what you've described as continuous cover. Yet there are large parts of the site which are lawn and don't have continuous cover that you've included in W1. But I find that interesting in the sense that if you look at the number of trees that were present in the area that appears to be under continuous cover, there's no more distinction made between their overlapping crowns within the area W1 and the areas that you've grouped, which is why I brought it back to assessment of amenity.
Don't follow, sorry.
Well, if you look at the areas on your images where you... In fact, if I take you to my image, which has W1 overlaying on a drone image that we've taken, these areas here, if I've got this right way around, I've got Budden Lane in front.
Yeah.
The area here you've included as a group within the TPO. But the densities of the trees there are certainly no less than the sort of densities we would have had here had you stripped out the rhododendron. So the evidence is there, really. Why is this a woodland and that not?
So, yeah, the question is, why have I applied it? And that's a fair question. And I think it comes down to expedience, really. And it comes down to the fact that, it wouldn't have been possible to have made a group order for those trees, because the trees that remained were small saplings and what was in the seed bank and those stumps. I'm not entirely sure that it's inappropriate to protect a stump. You know, you will have seen many, I'm sure, mature and impressive coppice stalls, and it's possible for a tree to be felled and still reach veteran status as a result of coppice management or pollarding. And so whilst it wouldn't have been, the reason is really for expedience and a hope as well for the convenience of the owner, actually.
I think I appreciate the sentiment, but I don't think convenience is working. It comes back down to the use of the wooden classification. If it was expedient in the interest of amenity, then it would be expedient to perhaps TPO the trees on Budden Lane that provide the screen, notwithstanding the intermediate screen of G2 before you get to the built form. Why not make a group order to include the trees that were still present as an extension to G2, or maybe a separate group order on the frontage to Budden Lane?
Yeah.
I don't see how there's any distinguishing features between the groups and what you've created as a woodland. You certainly can't use the woodland order to create a woodland.
In a way, what you're asking me, why haven't I put a woodland TPO over the whole site?
No, quite the opposite. What I'm asking is why use even go near the woodland order when the group order would have been sufficient to protect all trees at the time the order was made?
The group order would only have protected those trees along the front, and those trees alone don't provide that screening, and they don't.
That wouldn't prevent you from making a group order on any of the other trees that were still standing that you feel should be included in W1.
And I think, in a way, what your question is asking is why haven't I applied the woodland order more widely?
No.
And I think, well, it's an issue that is raised by your question.
That's not what I want the answer to. Just for the benefit of the committee, I think the question is very simply, if you'll forgive me, why have we got a woodland order when a group order would have done a more specific and procedurally correct job of protecting the same trees?
Well, I'll take issue with the procedurally correct. The woodland order is there because, in my view, a group order merely protecting the trees along Budden Lane would not have been adequate for the sylvan character of Budden Lane and the screening of the site, etc., as I've listed, to have been reinstated.
So just for the benefit of the committee then, are you saying that if we protected these trees on Budden Lane with a group order, it would preclude you from protecting these trees, and you're saying that would have no effect on the means?
No, I wouldn't preclude that.
I didn't think
you
would. So if you were making a group order, you'd protect these and you'd protect these. You wouldn't confer a woodland then across the lawn in a cleared area of rhododendron?
Well, because this is not a cleared area of rhododendron. This is an area. No. This is
80%.
An area. Well, if you're talking about ground cover, you might be saying 80%, but you need to be thinking about canopy cover, and that's 100%, isn't it?
Not really, no. Yeah. I think we're going to have to disagree on that point. Can we come back to why we've used the woodland classification?
Yeah, I'm trying to answer that question. The woodland classification here allows this area to regenerate and to retain that woodland character. It's retaining a long-standing woodland character across the site without imposing unnecessarily on the owner. The group classification here allows, and the separation of the order into groups and woodlands allows for future flexibility, really, and for revisiting the order. But it helps to maintain that visual amenity and public amenity at the back end of the site where it's most important. It's not just an area of rhododendron. You can see from the trees that have been felled that were a lot of large, significant trees there in good health. You can see the effect of that screening on street view. You can see the effect of that street, or you can understand the effect of that screening from the public reaction to their and their enjoyment of that woodland, and that contributes to our understanding of the amenity value of that part of the site.
Appreciate
it. It would not have been fair to impose that woodland classification across other parts of the site.
No, absolutely.
And yet, what the woodland classification allows helps to take in account of the biodiversity value, which is a feature of this site, and it is relevant to the order in protecting the understory. Now, Mr. Coe's assessment identified hollies up here as being unworthy of protecting. They shouldn't belong in that group. And actually, it might be that the owner wants to, to clear this end of the site. But really, the understory and those small hollies, there's small yews, there was a lot of holly in here as well, by the way, contribute to that biodiversity by providing that shrub layer. And the shrub layer, those native shrubs, yew, hazel, holly, and hawthorn, form part of a woodland, and they're an important part of the visual amenity of that woodland and of its biodiversity value, and it's appropriate therefore to try and protect that across part of the site, which I think, notwithstanding your concerns about aerial mapping and their valid concerns, the site has been mapped as woodland for a long period of time, and I think we have enough evidence from what we see from the felled trees and from what you can still see on aerial images to support that impression of high canopy with understory, notwithstanding the fact that a significant part of that is alien shrubs, but as we've already established, the presence of alien shrubs doesn't preclude something from being considered as woodland.
Okay, just a couple of points, just for, again, for the benefit of everyone else. In terms of, you keep returning to this, it's been a woodland for a long period of time. There simply isn't reliable evidence to prove that, and we know at least since the 60s it's been a lawn with ornamental trees, and we know during the early part of the 20th century it was an orchard. In terms of timing, it seemed, I understand the sentiment now that you feel that you don't think the appellant a bit of a favour by not confirming a woodland order across the rest of the site. I understand that, but I still feel that the appropriate use of the group classification would achieve what you are seeking to achieve, which we don't doubt.
No,
because
would.
I'm afraid you can't retrospectively use a W1 to create a woodland. And the fact of the matter is, you made W1 after the trees were removed. So you're in effect using W1 to try and reinstate a woodland that was never there and never assessed. But what you could do, and what you are seeking to do, is retain and improve on and enhance the amenity for Budden Lane, which you could do through the use of a group designation on the trees that are still standing. I think to try and use a TPO to force natural regeneration on a garden is over-egging it. I'm sorry.
That's your view. I disagree, actually, that group one would be sufficient, because there's the site's entirely open here. The canopy is quite high on this group, and so for pedestrians using that site, it doesn't provide that screening effect.
That's doing the screening in W1, isn't it?
And whether it's secondary woodlands or planted woodland or not, it still remains woodland. And the fact that there's been some garden management and that it was lawn at some point in the past doesn't really change that in my mind. There's a significant seed bank. Not all the trees were removed. There were the stumps of large trees are regenerating. They have not been removed. There were a number of seedlings that were, and saplings, I've mentioned those yew saplings that were removed after the order was made, and that's part of the basis for the enforcement complaint. So not all the trees were removed.
I'm going to have to disagree with you.
But you haven't seen the site until recently, have you?
If you just let me finish that. I'll have to disagree with you in the sense that the trees that are forming the amenity on the Budden Lane at the moment are still there and could be TPO'd as a group appropriately. Having seen the site cleared, I don't see how you were able to make a woodland order on a cleared site to allow what would happen in any event, which is natural succession. If you arrest the management of any site, you're going to get the seed bank re-established. And you all know as well as I do, you create a clearing anywhere where there's been cover, where, be it rhododendron or a beautiful oak woodland, it's going to regenerate. You're going to get the seed bank just kick in. And that's what's happened here. But that's not the purpose of a W1. I think the point of this evening is for us to discuss the way in which the order has been made. And I understand why you've used W1, but it doesn't satisfy the requirements of a woodland classification. It doesn't say that a woodland order can be made to restore a habitat that may or may not have been there and was never assessed in any event. The woodland order is there to protect the visual amenity of a woodland and everything that does naturally occur with it and regenerate through succession, etc., or gets planted in it thereafter. But unfortunately, in terms of procedure,
the trees were already down that you were seeking, that had any amenity value. Anything that was left, which apparently I haven't seen, but clearly wasn't of a size to be included in an order because it was less than 75 mil at 1.5 metres in diameter. So in any event, there was nothing there that could be protected, only stumps.
Not nothing. And yes, they were smaller trees. They were smaller trees that would have been, actually not all. There has been a large hazel clip from there as well.
But it's not a woodland, is it?
As a whole, I think it is.
I think therein lies our professional disagreement.
Yes, I think that's. I think you were backing it back.
Yeah, it's been incredibly interesting.
It really. Anybody, any more comments?
Yeah, finish up. I'm trying to work out what's. We're talking about a woodland. Are you accepting that G1, the TPOs on G1 are?
Group one. Yeah, we're not disputing the use of the groups. I think the groups is an appropriate use of the TPO guidelines.
Yeah, so it's just W1 that we're.
It's simply W1.
Yeah.
We feel
because
that
there is something in the notes where. There was something where it said there was 100 trees, page 21, let me just look.
Where it said here,
a survey had tagged 101 trees, of which it's proposed 14 merit protection. So that's gone. You're accepting group 1 and group 2, it's just W1 that.
It's purely the use of the woodland classification
on that area. And the other two,
group one, group two, it stacks up. It makes sense under the TPO guidelines.
Because on the last appendix here, it's got trees listed in objection, and there's 14 trees that have got blue round. So that's been.
I think that relates
superseded
to John Coe's objection.
That's been superseded.
That's been superseded.
Thank you. I can understand where. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, has everybody made points they wanted to make?
Yes.
Mark, nothing about it?
No.
Okay, shall we go and have a chat while you guys have a drink? Okay, hello again, we're back. Yes, it's taken us quite a while. Talk about this with thrashers around a lot. First of all, we need to say that we definitely recognise that there was an amenity value on most of the aspects of the order, and we would like to confirm the tree preservation order on groups G1 and G2. We are less comfortable with the woodland order. We don't like the retrospective nature of taking a site as it is now and placing an order in order to regenerate it. So we would like to withdraw the TPO, withdraw the woodland order, but strongly recommend that planners consider placing a group order on the trees between this area and Budden Lane. So that is how we feel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.